The following podcast is part of a special oral history program titled The RSL, A Time to Celebrate 2021. The program documents fascinating and personal stories and experiences of veterans, war widows and partners right across South Australia. The program is in partnership with the Tanunda RSL sub-branch, Christian Teusner from the Emu Tree, and has received funding through the Saluting Their Service Commemorative Grants Program via the Department of Veteran Affairs. I encourage listeners to take their time to explore as many of these stories and adventures as possible. For further information, visit theemutree.com. Thank you for allowing me into your home and to talk with you today, Joan. Thank you very much. Can I ask you to start by just stating your full name and your date of birth for me, please?
Yes, my full name is Joan Elizabeth Thompson. My knee name was Bowring, Bowring.
And your date of birth, please, Joan?
Yes, the 4th of the 10th, 1931.
Could we start, and would you be able to share a little bit of information about where you grew up? Where were you born and where did you grow up?
I grew up in Victoria, born at the Queen Victoria Hospital in Melbourne. Lived in Northcote with my mother and father, their first child. I was their first child.
What were your parents' names?
Mabel Isabel Bowring, knee name Edwards. Bit of convict history there, I think. My father was Oswald Edward Bowring. Know nothing about my Bowring grandfather. He disappeared from the face of the earth, and my grandmother had to divorce him without knowing where he was.
Well, he just simply disappeared.
He disappeared, yes. I think there was some story about him probably being drowned at sea, but I don't know anything more than that, except that Grandma maintained that she had seen him once in Bacchus Marsh, which was where she lived with her husband of that time.
So it was never discovered?
Never discovered, no.
Can you tell me a little bit about where you grew up? What was that like?
I grew up, I lived in Northcote until the age of about 5 to 6. And I attended a little school, co-ed school in Northcote, called Wesley. Had nothing to do with Wesley College that I know of, but it was a little college school. And at that time, we moved to this Middle Brighton, Park Street, Middle Brighton, number 5, Park Street, Middle Brighton, Victoria.
And what do you remember about?
I had a sister by that time.
Okay.
3 years after I was born. Well, I went to a little school in Park Street called Esperance, run by 2 maiden ladies.
Were they good times, do you remember? Or were you a little bit too
very
young?
Very good times, yes. Probably only about 50 children. Girls, was a girls' school. A lovely fete once a year with, you know, merry-go-round in the grounds and that sort of thing. Little private school in Brighton. Well, we had birthday parties and gave each other books and things like that. Yes, good early childhood.
When was the last time you were back to visit the area?
Mm. No, Bob and I went back. I would think it would be at least 25 or 26 years ago we visited there.
And how was that experience? Did a lot of memories come flooding back for you?
Oh, absolutely, yes, because my mother and father had bought this house in Park Street, but not long after that, he had the diagnosis. He had this problem with the growth on his leg, which was removed, and it was melanoma, and I was 8 years old when he died in that new house there. So the war broke out about that time. It was about 1939. Well, there was a lot of sadness at that time because my father died and mother was left alone. I think I felt rather insecure just then. I had a younger sister, 3 years younger. So she was born just before we left Northcote, really, Norma. So really in those years until I was about 14, so that'd be about 6 or 7 years, childhood with just mum and my sister, very quiet childhood. But my mother's brother, who was a commercial traveller, used to keep an eye on us and sometimes come and stay for the weekend with his widowed sister. He had a room available to him in that house. It was a big house in Park Street. And so he would come and go a bit, but he was very kind to my sister and myself, and very fond of our mother, his sister.
How did you get along with your sister? How did the two of you get on?
We got along pretty well. We were rather different, and I was sort of encouraged to look after her as the older one.
What sort of things would you do for entertainment? How would you entertain yourselves?
Well, I used to read a good deal, and Norma liked acting. She was at Esperance, the same school as I went to, and we had bicycles. We used to ride our bicycles and go to these parties and things like that. We also belonged to the Middle Brighton Church of Christ, and we would walk to Sunday school together, and of course walk to school together and so on, just up the street. We had a fairly protected childhood, I think you would say, and Mother used to once a year take a house at Kalorama, and we'd go there for the main holidays. And sometimes one of Mother's aunts would come with us. And we loved the Dandenongs. We'd go walking all over the place there. And then, of course, Mother... Did Mother remarry when we were there? No, I think she was beginning to find the house too big. And we bought a house in 75 Dendy Street, Middle Brighton, and moved there, which was a bit further away from the school, and Norma and I used to ride bicycles to school. The war was on while we lived there. The Melbourne Orphanage was opposite where we lived, which was a big open area, and occasionally we'd go special things they'd have over at the orphanage, just like sort of meetings and things. So it might have been something to do with the church, I don't know, but I know we did that. And then when I got to age 12, I started school at PLC in East Melbourne.
What does PLC stand for?
Presbyterian Ladies' College. I'd been booked, we had each been booked into PLC from very early days. Our mother and father were keen for us to go there. So for a while I went there and Norma stayed at Esperance. And from that time we settled more with our own group of friends. because I started at the same time as one other girl from Esperance called Margaret Montgomery, and we remained friends from Esperance to PLC and for life, really. I was a bridesmaid. And then I was there until leaving the certificate. And because I'd decided to go into nursing, and mother had remarried, of course, by this stage, that I left school and got a job in the ES&A bank, where I worked as a clearinghouse person. I worked in one of the machine areas and used to go over to the Melbourne clearinghouse on the opposite side of Collins Street to the ES&A for the daily clearance of the money. The clearinghouse, I can't remember what all that was about, but I know I used to have to do some adding up and submit, you know, what had gone on in our department of the bank.
Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy that?
Each day. Yes, I quite liked that, because there were by then I was growing up and there were young men, and I became quite friendly with a couple of boys from the Commonwealth Bank, and I went out to some of their functions, and that was an enjoyable time. I enjoyed it. But I had put my name down for nursing at the Royal Melbourne Hospital, and once I turned 18, that allowed me to go there and train to be a registered nurse.
So for quite some time you had that desire or that vision to go into nursing?
Yes. I knew that I couldn't go until I was 18, but because I'd left school at 16 and there was no money now to send me to university, which I did in a way think I would like to do, I realised nursing, and I had wanted to do nursing anyway, really. It was sort of, I went into nursing and I really enjoyed.
So how many years study did you need to do?
3 years of sort of practical and studied lectures and so on, and then a year of what we called staff nursing, which is like a junior trained nurse. So 4 years in total.
Did that pass quickly, did you find, those 4 years?
Yes, we lived in. We had one day off a week, and I think it was £2.10 a fortnight we used to get in pay. We'd have one day off, and sometimes had lectures during our day off, so we might go home to spend the day with the family, but have to come back if we had a lecture and so on. So life was almost totally controlled in a sense, because there was a time that you were supposed to be in at night. We lived in a building called Connor Building at the Royal Melbourne, where there was to be no smoking or drinking. It had been given to the hospital or given to the government by the Salvation Army, we were told. And there were these regulations.
And was there no smoking and no drinking?
There wasn't drinking, to my memory, but there was quite a bit of smoking. And it was very common for us to get off from the evening shift at 11 o'clock at night, and to then be with your friends who'd done evening work as well and just talk over the evening's proceedings. And that room was usually full of smoke. Whether you smoked or not, you were sitting there with your friends having a cup of coffee. And we supported each other, really. There was no counselling. We had worries. We just offloaded at that time in my memory, but made lifetime friends, which I'm still in touch with per phone at the age of 90. There were five of us who were special friends, and each of our names started with J. I don't know how it sort of came about, really, but we remained friends for life. And there are still four of us alive. Jenny St. John was one, and she sadly died 2 years ago. But we're all in our dotage now.
Can you tell me who the other Jays are, please?
Yes. There's Judith Groman, G-R-O-M-A-N-N. Jenny St. John, now deceased. Jennifer St. John. Judith Budd, B-U-T-T, Nename Taylor. And Jeanette San Miguel. We're all around the 90, yes. Jeanette is almost a year older. But there are others too in that nursing group. There are 21 of us who started at the Royal Melbourne at the same time. And there are others in that group that I'm still in contact with. So we're a good group together.
So when you catch up on the phone, what sort of things do you chat about?
Chat about mainly our health these days, but other things too, about how we're managing food and looking after ourselves and so on, and what's generally going on in our lives, whether we're still doing some gardening or what we're doing, and children, if we have them, what they're up to. Two of those girls didn't ever marry. I was bridesmaid to Jeanette San Miguel. She married and had five children. Judy Budd married and had four. I think she only had four. And then I married late and had one. I had a daughter. While I was in my staffing year at the Royal Melbourne, my mother and stepfather moved to Adelaide, where my mother's sister lived, now widowed. She was much older than Mum. And Mum and Frank and my stepbrother and stepsister, who were much younger. I was 21 when my stepsister was born. They moved to Adelaide. So I spent quite some years working in Adelaide and perhaps going to Melbourne, visiting friends and my uncle Norman and so on in Melbourne. And I went back to Melbourne to do midwifery at the Royal Women's in Melbourne. And some of my nursing friends were getting married and all that sort of thing was going on at that stage. So I was coming and going between Melbourne and Adelaide, and I worked at Ashford Hospital, mainly in the operating theatre, when it was a little old home in the middle of a huge block of land. It was just a little old house connected in some way, I think, with the Goodwood Council. The matron there was a Miss Good, an old army nurse, who used to fight with a doctor who had a practice in Anzac Highway. And they'd fight even in the corridor of this old house. They didn't get on somehow, but he had patients there. So I worked there for some time.
So they left an impression in your mind?
They certainly did, yes. Strong impression. And I left there to do midwifery in Melbourne, actually. So I hadn't done midwifery when I worked there. I just worked mainly in the operating theatre. And then I went to Melbourne and did midwifery, which took a year at the Royal Women's Hospital in Carlton. And when I'd finished there, I came back to Adelaide and worked, first of all, at the Queen Victoria Hospital in Adelaide, in the labour ward. It's going back a long time. It's going back to... I know we sometimes delivered babies on Fullerton Road there outside the hospital. You know, the taxi had come with Mother and be a bit late, so we'd be delivering babies and cars and things outside the hospital. So it was a busy time. It was a busy hospital. And it was a strange place because it seemed a bit built on in batches, and you'd be pushing barouches up hills and things. Few memories of the place. But there was an old doctor there called Dr. Worm, who I remember well, who was a great friend to women in Adelaide, I would say. He was a very kindly man. And then there was quite a character in this Tassie Aitken who was around the place. These were strong identities in the time I was there.
What year was this? Can you pinpoint the year? Early 50s? Or just
very early 50s, I'd say. I went from there over to the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, and I worked there altogether for 17 odd years, starting off in the labour ward.
Do you have any idea of how many babies you've brought into this world?
No, I couldn't tell you how many, but a lot, yes. And I got a bit, I thought, well, I'm a bit bogged down in labour ward. I think I'll ask, can I move over to the general? Because it was just developing. They were opening, floor after floor. And they were on the top floor, the eighth floor. And so I opened the last ward, went over as the charge nurse and had to account for all the equipment and so on in the ward, the trainee nurses and whatever. So I worked in the physician's private ward called 8B. It was the last ward to open in the general part of the Queen Elizabeth Hospital. From there, I applied for leave because some of my Melbourne friends, Jenny St. John in particular, were going to America to work as exchange RNs in American hospitals. And so we're now in the 1960s. In 1963, I did three assignments in America at the Peter Bent Brigham Hospital in Boston. It's a part of the Harvard University setup. And then 6 months, then I had about a month off where we were doing a bit of travelling around in America, which we did in those days. The second assignment was 6 months in Denver, the University of Denver Hospital. It was the first time out of Australia. Yes, it was.
Do you remember the journey to the States?
Yes, I flew, and Jenny, my friend from Melbourne, she went by ship. She was fairly experienced. She'd been overseas before. Met her in Vancouver, and we went by train across the Rockies there, then down into Boston, where we worked at the hospital there. And then I think we were in Denver. Jenny had to go back because she was back to Australia. She was working at the Queen Vic, and she only had 6 months leave, whereas I'd taken 12 months. But I went to Denver, and I worked there in the psychiatric ward. I did psychiatry there, worked in the psychiatric part of the hospital. And I quite enjoyed that, and they really wanted me to stay. But I don't know. I think the matron, she was offering me something or other, but I'd been given the 12-month leave from the Queen Elizabeth. So I decided I'd extend that and go away from psych and went to I took an assignment at the New York, the Yeshiva University Hospital in New York, and did operating room stuff there. They called it operating room. And I'd not been given permission to take an extended time from the Queen Elizabeth, where I'd worked for many years. So I had to resign, but the matron said she would like me to come back. Well, I did come back because I realised I was so far away from home. And while I was in, other parts of the world, I might as well go to England and make use of the time being away from Australia, because I probably wouldn't be able to afford to do it again. And so I did the 6 months in operating room in New York, and then went with a West Australian friend that I'd met working in America, a nurse, and went to England. We went on the, I think it was called the SS United States. It was a ship that just went across the Atlantic to England.
For you at the time, it must have been a fantastic adventure as well.
Oh, it was. Yes, it was. Meeting people from all over the world. Yes, that's true. It was a privilege to be able to do it, really. And then I went to England and I did some special, you know, I joined a specialing agency. You had to register with these people as a trained nurse. You had to register as a, don't know whether we were called RNs in Britain or not, I can't remember, but you were given a badge and you paid a membership and so on. And so they gave you these specialing nursing jobs. And Roberta and I rented tiny little sort of flat, more like a double room with a little kitchenette and a bathroom. And we rented that in London. And
what part of London were you living in?
Yes, good question. Isn't it strange? I can hardly remember where that little flat was. It wasn't quite where all the Australians were. And from that sort of centre, we sometimes had to move off to do specialing, you know, which was like often a good 8-hour shift or something. So we weren't in the centre a lot together. But I can't tell you exactly where it was.
When you had time off, what did you get up to in London?
Well, we went to the art galleries and things like that, but we did. And this one I did do with Roberta, so we had to give up our little... We didn't have that little centre for very long because we found the jobs that we were given, that's what happened, were sort of specialing type jobs where you had to live in. Although we kept it, we kept it. I looked after an elderly man who lived in a very, very beautiful apartment looking over one of the gardens in England. But his son was very worried because there was a housekeeper who lived in the apartment too, and a lot of it was keeping him away. There's quite a lot of this in London, I think, because two of the jobs I had were also keeping the housekeeper at a distance. I think they were frightened that the old boy would be marrying the housekeeper or something. So this applied to one job I had. And another one which I did with Roberta, which was moving into the house where this old Mr. Behar, who was an art dealer from Scotland, he'd had a stroke. And there were his son was a lawyer in London who employed Roberta and myself. This is perhaps where we moved out of this centre we bought in London. But we moved into this big two-storey house in Folkestone to look after Mr. Behar. And Mr. Behar had a housekeeper and a chauffeur who was also a bit of a cook, and had Roberta and myself and a lass from Ireland as his three nurses in residence to look after him. Part of our duty was to keep the housekeeper at a distance, which was a bit of a scream. But we cared for him and we covered the 24 hours of the day at our own designing. We were able to do that. So we'd sometimes give each other a day off or something to go to have a look at Folkestone or something or other else, and carry the 12-hour shift each, you know, to care for him.
So it's very flexible.
Nice old man. Mm. Yes, it was very flexible. So it was quite a good arrangement. And another job, and I think we got that through this agency that you had registered with, and another job we had was to go on a boat, that left England and went on a cruise with the employees of post offices, I think. We went as nurses looking after, and by this time another Australian nurse, Judy Groman, had come over to London, and she was joining in on that too. So the three of us, Roberta and Judy Groman and me, we went on this old ship, the British India Line, I think it was the Deneera, and we were housed in the bilge, is it? The really bottom of the boat. And it creaked all night. I was sure we'd be in the, you know, bed of the ocean. But we were there in bunk beds in a big area at the bottom of the ship. And we ran some of the night entertainment, like, yes, I think it's bingo. That's right. Yes, we used to run the bingo, and we'd do things like that as well as being nurses on board. And when they pulled in at Lisbon and so on, we were able to go on the bus tours. It was like the employees' club with the post offices. I don't know what you'd call it these days. But and then I had an experience working at a nursing home up in Scotland. And while we had time off, we'd go and look at parts of that part of the world. Then I came back to Australia, really, after seeing a bit of England. And I didn't get to Wales, sadly, and I didn't get to Ireland, but I did see some of England and some of Scotland. And then I came home. And when I came back to the Queen Elizabeth, matron offered me the job in charge of outpatients, which I did for 7 years. But while I was working there, I had civilized hours and things, and at that time I met Bob, my husband, and that's why I'm a war widow, although I wasn't with him in the war years.
Can you tell me how you met Bob?
Yes, I met Bob through Jeanette San Miguel, a girl I trained with, now living in Sydney with her husband and 5 children. And had a husband who worked in the same insurance company, and Bob was working as the manager. It was Unity Life Insurance, part of Sun Alliance, and he was working as the Adelaide manager. And her husband came over on business to see Bob. They were doing something together, and brought a Christmas gift over for me, and he rang me and said, look, I've got a package here from Jeanette. Will you meet me in Adelaide tonight for dinner? And I've got a friend with me, would you mind? So I didn't mind, and I met Bob. And while we were at dinner, he asked me to accompany him to the Christmas gathering for Unity Life, which I did. And then we started going out, because I had civilized hours for once in my life, working in outpatients and so on. And that's how I fell in love with Bob, and he liked me, so we married. And that was in 1969. So I had a big life, really. I married Bob, then I was 41 when I had this daughter, who eventually joined the army, and now she's living in Canberra, and she's a colonel in the army, and she's got 3 children and a husband who's a very nice man. So I've had a very good life. I'm ancient now, but I'm sorry, I hope that hasn't all bored you. It's a lot of
this
stuff.
This is fantastic. This is really wonderful. It really is.
Might have got a wee bit jumbled in England when I was, you know, doing those bit of this and a bit of that. Because you had to work, of course, to keep yourself alive and seeing a bit of the world. And I'd spent a lot of money, because I'd had to sell my little car I had before I left to go, you know, book to go. And I really, my mother and stepfather had their own family, were not all that well off. And at times needed a bit of help here and there, so all that went on in my life too. None of us really had much money in those days, really.
When you were in the States and Europe, was it hard to maintain contact with the family back here in Australia?
Well, it was mainly writing letters. We did write letters to each other. I guess we could have had the odd phone call, but, you know, we weren't really in very close contact, I must say. My mother and stepfather had a busy life with the younger ones. So, but they would write, and we would write. That was about the best we could do, really. Yes, there was a bit of, but I'd more or less been making my own life because of my mother remarrying, I suppose, and, you know, and there wasn't a lot of, you couldn't really depend on your family sustaining you or buying you a house, as seems to be the expected thing people say today. But, no, you had to watch what you were doing with your money too, and you couldn't really keep a contact that sustained you a lot with your family because you were so far away, I suppose. It was probably more adventurous than we realised it was. I mean, we always felt we'd be able to go back home, which must be hard for people today. Australians have always been fairly adventurous, I think, haven't they? And it's very common for Australians to be roaming around the world, obviously. There's so many thousands of them now who will want to come back. I loved nursing, and it was always something to look forward to. You know, I suppose, in a way, nursing gave me access to seeing a bit of the world and improving my life, because I had it when I was at Brighton, in the Brighton Church of Christ. There was a young man who was seemed very interested in me. He wrote to me just about all my life. I just knew I wasn't ready to get married somehow. I just felt there was more to life than just going from school into marriage, you know. It didn't seem to appeal to me at that stage of my life.
So you're very independent.
I suppose in a way I was, yes. And I guess some of that was because there wasn't that mum-dad thing so much in my life, I guess. It was mum. As a child, it was mum with my sister and myself, you know. Mm. That was really the close family, really. Yes, I don't know what it was, but I just wasn't all that interested in marrying or settling down. I think it was just I wasn't ready for it.
Can you recollect maybe a few stories about the early romance with Bob, the early days of romance?
Well, I can tell you that I was a bit of a spectacle in the nursing home, because at the Queen Elizabeth in those days, we lived in the nursing home. That was still going on. It was just starting to change in the late 60s. And I was one of the, you know, charge sisters in the place. And this man was coming to take me out to dinner quite a bit. We'd find people were hanging out of the windows almost, looking at us. You know, Bob seemed to endure a bit of that. But I think we just, you know, we were aware of, he'd not long been in Adelaide, really. He'd come over from Melbourne. And I think the company had, you know, got him to move over. And his two children were not really very happy about it. There were a few little troubles, but they were always very nice to me. And they were at the stage of beginning to make their lives, Helen and just decided she'd start nursing at Calvary in Adelaide, and Rob was doing his matric at school. So, you know, they were there. Bob was at home with his two kids. We just did things, mainly going out to dinner at night, and sometimes I'd be going to other things with him. But we became engaged fairly quickly, I suppose. We met about early December in 1968, and we were married in July 69 at Scott's Church in North Terrace in Adelaide. There's a bit of a story there too. Well, Bob was the child of an Anglican priest, and he's got a big story too. His mother died when he was just a young man, and he grew up with a stepmother. He had two sisters, and none of them liked their stepmother. They moved from Sandringham area in Melbourne up to Hay, where his dad became the Archdeacon of the Riverina. And Bob was a teenager at this stage, and he went from moving around the big sheep stations and things in that area, helping his father to take communion to all these outlying areas with a car, you know, getting bogged and things like that, to his early working life, where he worked with a company in Melbourne, but he was also in what was the Army Reserve. Then, of course, the war broke out and he moved into the army and quickly sent off to Syria. And then he met Molly, and she was a Catholic girl, and he became a Catholic. But then over the years he drifted away from church altogether. And I was more really uniting church inclined. So that's why we were married at Scots.
Did Bob reflect on his time in Syria at all with you?
He did. He was on a motorbike. I think he had some sort of accident there. He said it was very difficult on the motorbike. They were fighting the Vichy French, I gather. So all this goes back a long time, doesn't it? You know how the French were very involved and lost a lot of people in that First World War. I don't know a lot about war history, but he was one who was called back to Australia because I think Mr. Curtin decided we needed, when the Japanese were active, he decided the Australians had to start coming back. And so they were being moved back to Singapore when Singapore fell. They were on the sea when Singapore fell. And they had to be brought back to Australia. And he was sent in to train Brisbane and was sent up to Kokoda. He was promoted in the field, Bob. He got a few of these mentioned in dispatches, things. He had a good war history as far as I understand it. And he never talked much about his war history. I didn't find out much about it until we went to Melbourne once, and we went up to one of his regiment 2nd 14th annual dinners in Melbourne. And they were thinking at that time of going on a trip to Ishirava. It was at the opening of the memorial at Ishirava. And we joined the bookings for that. And I began to realise all about his life in Kokoda and so on, which really he hadn't spoken much about at all. Well, he was one of those men who came back from the war, I gather, and of course he tumbled. He didn't necessarily want to leave the army, but because Molly was constantly depressed and so on, he got out of the army, but then was a bit lost. And he went to work for his cousin, who owned a business making stainless steel saucepans and things, a very good company called S Steel. And he was the sales manager for S Steel until his cousin decided to sell the business. And then he was fairly lost, and he became involved with insurance, I suppose. It was perhaps the only job he could get at that time, I don't know. He didn't really especially like the job, although he was made state manager and came here. That's when I met him. But he was well away from his army time then, because he had so many problems in his life, and he had two children to care for, and so on, because she'd been in hospital in Kew Cottages for something like 10 or 12 years, I think, when she hadn't been at home. And his sisters were pretty good. One in particular, who was a school teacher, helped him quite a lot with the children, with Helen and Rob. But he was never the sort of person who went to all the old army stuff, you know, because I knew him in Adelaide. And he just didn't seem to be into going to RSL or things like that. And in my time with him, he got involved with the Kiwanis Service Club. And because of his background, which was being brought up in a rectory, he had this outreach sort of characteristic.
Mm-hmm.
And Kiwanis was a big part of our married life, really. He helped them build up. He won all those awards in Kiwanis. He was what they called the governor, who looked after it all. In, you know, they had these great grandiose terms, looked after Australia. And we did a lot of travelling around with Sarah, our daughter, with Kiwanis. We went to America and to Europe and America. So I'm back in the travelling days again with our life within Kiwanis Service Club. He won many awards in Kiwanis. It was good life, and it was his way of looking at life, really. He was happiest when he was reaching out. When he was the manager of insurance, he was more interested in what the reps, how they were getting on, rather than how much money they were making. I don't really think he was a very good insurance company manager, to be truthful, but he was very good, always happy, and I think that was had something to do with his father's sort of outreachy sort of attitude to life.
Mm-hmm.
That was the attitude that Bob had. It was part of what I liked about him, I suppose, and, you know, that's just the way he liked to live, really.
So always looking out for others.
Well, yes, I think it was very much in his blood, and because sometimes he'd speak sometimes of those earlier days in the country, which he loved. He loved living in Hay. He went to the high school there, and later on they sent him down to Ivanhoe Grammar, and we worked out in our lives that we were probably each in the Fairfield Infectious Diseases Hospital at a similar time when we each had diphtheria. I was 4 years old and he was a young teenager at Ivanhoe Grammar in Melbourne. Yes, life's a very interesting journey, isn't it?
That really makes it feel like a small world, doesn't it?
It does. So there wasn't a lot of talk about the war. He did mention one very hairy time for him when it was being organised. I think it must have been in New Guinea, where groups of men were being sent out behind the enemy lines with a leader, and each time they were, you know, they were killed, and another group was sent out. And he was in line to be the next one to take them out, which was the only really very hairy time he described. He said he knew that he was to go very soon to lead this group. And a decree came from the person at the top who said, just finish that. Don't send any more, because mm-hmm. they were all being obliterated. And so he didn't have to go. But I think he knew he'd be killed if he went. So that was a very hairy time that he did describe to me. Although he very rarely talked about the war. I think he used to have some nightmares at the end when they'd ring me up from the nursing home. He couldn't get off to sleep. He'd be back at the war. And they'd say, come over and settle him down. So I'd go over there and he'd settle down and go off to sleep. But, he came back to him, I'm sure. You know, at times, especially once he was in dementia, there were times. But I've had a very big life and a very enjoyable life, really, and I'm very grateful for it. and I'm an Anglican now. And I, you see, after we were married, we were married for 3 years, and then I had Sarah. And Sarah started playing netball. Bob wasn't terribly interested in church at all, but all my life I have been interested. I was brought up within the Church of Christ, and I was baptised at the age of 14. So I come from that sort of background, Christian background. And then it was important, even in my nursing life, to attend church. And I used to like to go to church, although I didn't have a typical church environment once I was nursing, because you could never dedicate time. You didn't know much about your hours during most of nursing life. But I used to like to hear decent sermons. And when I was in Melbourne, I'd usually go to the Independent Church in Collins Street and so on. But when we had Sarah, at quite a young age, she started playing netball. And I was involved with the parents' group who were helping the kids or whatever. And it was attached to a, I think it was a type of Wesleyan, but somewhat connected with the United Church. And so I said to Bob, you know, we ought to go along and support the church that's sustaining the kids in netball. But he could, having been brought up as an Anglican, he couldn't adjust to the type of service we had. So I could understand that. So I said, well, let's go down to the Anglican, which we did. And I became an Anglican, and our daughter was brought up in the Anglican church. And she wanted to join the Anglican priesthood when she left school. And we said, well, you can't go straight from school into the church. You don't know anything much about life. So she did an ag science degree and got that at the University of Adelaide. And then she still wanted to do theology, and she did. And she was ordained in the Riverina, where Bob's father had been involved in the clergy. And while she had a parish there, and even with a young family, we'd go over there, and she'd be going off to some little church at night with a child under her arm, you know. And while she was there, she was near Wagga, and some of her old, she was in the Army Reserve when she was at the university. Some of her old mates had been working there in Wagga, and she sometimes helped the clergy, the boys she must have known in the army. And somehow from there she decided, I think they might have talked her into it, going into the army as a priest. Mm-hmm. That's what she did. And wow. She seems to have done fairly well as a colonel now in the army, and she's in her 40s now. Her family's grown up, and she's had a very supportive husband, so she's very lucky.
What do you think have been some of the most amazing things that have happened in your lifetime?
I'm very grateful for what nursing did for me in my life. And I met such a broad range of people within the nursing world as I knew it. And it opened up opportunities for me. And I think it taught me a lot about what is important in one's life. That all sounds pretty me-centred. I guess I am fairly me-centred, I'm sad to say. But you're asking me what I think has happened significantly. I think it's very interesting that the Aboriginal people have shown a very gentle strength within Australian society, because they appear to me to be very often to have more European blood, and yet they seem to have led fairly heavily towards the Aboriginal values in life. That's interesting to me. A lot of them don't look as if they're remotely Aboriginal these days. And from what has certainly been oppressed lives in instances, they seem to be holding their own and coming forward, which I think is a good thing. And I tend to wonder about the formation of the Christian Church, even though I consider myself be Christian. But I tend to go towards a more allegorical Jesus and not an exclusive Jesus.
How have you found this last year with COVID-19? How has that affected you?
Well, it's directly, I suppose, it's affected me in that I can't go to Canberra to visit my... But I could now. But I can't now because I've got this... The haematologist tells me not to get on an aeroplane till I've been fully immunised. I've had the first injection and look forward to having the other one and going over to see them all. I don't know. I think these things will seem to have come about. Every generation seems to have had a big situation to contend with. Whether this is direct stuff coming from God or not, I really don't know. But it would appear from the science of the world that there's going to be some sort of an end. I think we've been very privileged in Australia, and I think I have been very privileged in my life, really. I've been very well cared for and loved throughout my life. And I really don't know. I think, well, we've found some form of immunity, haven't we? God's given us a brain, and whether we're going to work things out or not, I don't know.
You've had a very interesting life.
I have. I realise that, yes.
And you still are.
I still am, yes. That's true. That's true. I mean, there's so many gifts in life. And to look in that direction, you know, that we're very... it's all very well for me to say that we're very well cared for, but I have been in my life. And to be caring about other people, certainly to be caring. And try to understand, perhaps, the position that other people are in. Life's a very interesting and wonderful journey. Perhaps even keep that in mind.
Jane, thank you very much for having me. It's been an absolute privilege.
No, thank you for coming, Chris. It's good to meet you.
My pleasure. You too.
You have been listening to The RSL, A Time to Celebrate, 2021.